St. Louis University is about to begin 15 months of celebration. It's observing its 200th anniversary next year and is getting an early start in marking the milestone. In those 20 decades, the Jesuit institution has distinguished itself on many levels, many firsts for this first university established west of the Mississippi. And joining me in studio to discuss the celebration and other issues pertaining to the university is Dr. Fred Pistello, the St. Louis University president. Dr. Pistello, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Don. It's always good to be on St. Louis Public Radio here at KWMU.
We love to hear that. Thank you. I want to talk about the bicentennial, but given what's been happening in the last 24 hours and your university has been somewhat involved, just wanted to get your take on what happened on campus yesterday and the way it was handled.
Sure. So I can tell you that, not surprisingly, given our emphasis on social justice and our participation here and location in the region, that quite a number of our students are exceptionally concerned, as well as our faculty, staff, and administration, with recent events in the region and the deep issues upon which they touch. Issues which are clearly troublesome here in St. Louis and in other major metropolitan areas. So our students were very much a part of the protest over the past several days, and a number of them did demonstrate on our campus last evening.
And participated with the protesters,
yes.
as I understand it. I have a note here, and I'm not sure of your whether you're aware of this, but there was a SLU professor who asked why St. Louis University used their crime warning system to tell students to stay inside during yesterday's protests. Why are they teaching that protests are dangerous instead of how they are a fundamental part of democracy? It furthers the scary protester narrative, she said. Is that something that you could agree with?
So this morning we had a conversation about that and whether or not it was appropriate and how that was made and how we might have messaged differently to let people know that there was a protest but not cause any anxiety or mean to imply that in any way it was anything but nonviolent. So we're revisiting that in our protocols there.
You came to St. Louis, as I recall, during the year that Michael Brown was shot. And here we are again facing a similar kind of a situation. Just give me your take on that and the relationship between the two.
So I started July 1 of 2014. Michael Brown was shot on August 9th. And then on October 8th, Vondrick Myers Jr. Was shot. And that really brought it home to our campus because he's the son of one of our beloved employees. And it was clear that with that, you could see the frustration, the hurt, the anger among many in our community, and I mean in the broader community as well as in our campus community. That was a moment when I think it was an opportunity for us to come together and enact meaningful, positive change. I do think there has been some change and movement in the right direction, but not nearly enough. So I think what has happened recently with this particular verdict in this case is another opportunity for us to stop, to pause, to listen to each other and begin to enact those changes which are necessary to address these issues. The thing that I'm most particularly struck by is in my position, I have an opportunity to talk to people across the entire strata in our region and on our campus, and just the deep puzzlement, hurt, feeling that evil is being done on the part of many, how crushing this is. It really has touched me in a personal way.
Certainly gives your professors in the law school things to talk about, doesn't it?
Yeah, and they have been. I mean, we're fortunate to have a law school for many reasons, but they've been very active in trying to address some of these issues which we've been facing. And they have been doing a great deal of media trying to explain what has transpired here and continuing to call for reform.
Yeah. You mentioned a moment ago that you're going to revisit some of your protocols with regard to student involvement in situations like this. What sort of options do you have?
Well, protocols in terms of how we message in mm-hmm. a moment like that. I think the option is when do we say something and what is it that we say?
Can you just be a little more, give me a little more on that?
No, I mean, we began the conversation this morning saying, okay, this is what was called a Rave One message. What might be other options? When do we want to say anything? And when we say something, what do we say? And even confusion around, many people didn't know what that message, shelter in place, even means. So we just, it was a brief conversation this morning on the senior team, said that that is something we've got to, over the next days and weeks, address.
It's extraordinarily important, isn't it? Because the wrong decision on whether students stay in place or not actually could be a life or death situation, not necessarily in this case, right, but in others, I mean, we're familiar with.
I mean, it certainly wasn't in this case. No one was in any danger. We did have a situation earlier in the year when we thought, in fact, people were in danger. It turned out that they were not. Mm-hmm. We thought there was a gun on campus. It proved not to be a real gun. But at that time, we also issued these alerts, and I think it was the appropriate thing to do at that time, given what we knew. We thought there was a someone with a gun walking around campus.
Campus life has changed since you and I went to went to school at it.
Very much. The world's changed, yes.
Yes, it has. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you're really here to talk about, and that, of course, is your bicentennial. This is a 15-month celebration. I mean, you're obviously taking this very seriously.
Yeah, as I think we should. It's not many institutions of higher learning, or many institutions, period, that are 200 years old. With St. Louis U High, we are the longest continuing organizations in the region. We're the first university founded west of the Mississippi River. So think of that. Between the river and the Pacific Ocean, you go north and south and west, we were the only one, and we're quite proud of that history, the founding by Bishop DeBerg and the Jesuits who came from Baltimore to support him in this effort, and second oldest Jesuit institution. We're proud of all we've done, not that there isn't much more to do, so we're going to have a big celebration.
And it starts this Saturday, I believe, this weekend.
Yep. There'll be a couple activities earlier in the week. Including a conference on the Land O'Lakes seminar that was an historic event 50 years ago that was led by Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame and Father Reinert from SLU. And then Saturday evening at 5:30 at the Arch, one of the first events at the renovated grounds down there, we will have a mass to celebrate our bicentennial. After the Mass, there will be magicians and entertainment and opportunities to get some food, and then a big fireworks display. So we're hoping that the community joins us, Catholics and non-Catholics alike. All are welcome down at the Arch. The area opens at 4 o'clock, and the Mass will begin at 5:30. The Mass will be celebrated by Archbishop Carlson, and the homilist will be our provincial Father Ron Mercier.
15 months, again, what are some of the other things that you're going to be doing over that year and a quarter?
Yeah, it will actually be quite exciting. We will have some seminars. We will publish a bicentennial book. We will have faculty giving special presentations. We will mark it physically on the campus with a dedicated bicentennial by the new Grand Hall. We will have historic markers put up on the campus, and we will end with the St. Louis Symphony performing a concert specifically for our bicentennial.
And what will the role of the student body be during all of this, aside from attending these events?
Yeah. So the students themselves have been enlisted by the Bicentennial Committee to think of things that they would like to do, particularly in the area of service and participating in the seminars, and that is still being developed.
Right. You mentioned early on that there are a number of firsts that the university can boast about. What are some of those? A couple of them surprised me, and I've been around here for a while.
Yeah, so I can list a few. I happen to have them right here.
I thought you might. I do too.
First medical school in the American West, which is 1836. First law department west of the Mississippi, 1843. First forward pass in football, 1906. First federally certified flight school, 1927. First human heart transplant in the Midwest in 1972. And first location of the National Campus Kitchen Project, 2001. Those are some of the first of which we are proud.
I'm sure you're also very, very proud of the revitalization of this part of St. Louis. The university, I guess largely under Father Biondi, but a lot was done during his tenure here. The revitalization of this area has been just remarkable, a remarkable change.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Don. I think that my predecessors, particularly Father Biondi, showed wise stewardship of our property in terms of the art, the building, really beautifying the campus, the closing down of streets so it became a pedestrian campus. And I think you're going to see an enormous amount of investment, particularly in the areas between our north and south campuses over the next 5 years. We just completed two new residence halls, one with a remarkable dining facility. We broke ground, SSM Health and St. Louis University at St. Louis University Hospital for a new hospital and ambulatory care center. We have the Foundry Project on Forest Park, the Armory Project, and a number of other developments going on in that area. I think well over $1 billion in the next 5 years will be invested.
You mentioned that investment and what you're doing, and it brings to mind an article that I read in, I guess it was The Nation a year or so ago, by Michelle Goldberg, and when she was talking about a competition among institutions of higher learning to create an atmosphere that will attract more students. Of course, that's obviously what you want to do. But she indicated that the demand for amenities is such that an awful lot of money is being spent doing this. And that's one of the reasons that costs for college education are rising so quickly.
So it is clear that among private and flagship public institutions that we do provide quite an array of first-class amenities. And I think there's a certain level that one has to meet or else one would be disadvantaged in the very serious competition to attract students. It's certainly not the only thing upon which a student and parent makes a decision, but I can tell you it is not insignificant either. We're fortunate and blessed, however, to have a range of institutions, excellent institutions here in St. Louis and beyond at various price points so that those who might not be able to be comfortable at a more higher-priced private has other options. That said, I think all institutions, particularly the private institutions, increasingly are taking seriously scholarships. So the amount of investments in scholarships in higher education, both on the private and public side, has gone up dramatically, both those funded through our very generous donors and unfunded, which would be strict discounting. So if you look at the National Association of Higher Education, their data, which is up on their website, NICU, you will see that actually in inflation-controlled dollars, the typical student going to a place of private higher education is paying about the same that they would have in 2007, 2008.
Is the high cost, and I understand what you're saying about scholarship, but is the high cost of college education keeping minorities, the lower strata socioeconomic level, if you will, out of the opportunity to attend colleges and universities?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of issues there, and that's certainly one that every institution I know of is taking very seriously. How do we increase our socioeconomic and racial diversity? And investing scholarship dollars to do that. I think we're also, the institutions of which I'm most aware, doing what we can to increase the pipeline of those students on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale so that they complete school and that they come through school prepared for college-level work. So it's both working with the primary and secondary schools and even on the pre-K level, as we and so many others are doing, and then being able to try to make it as affordable as possible for those students from more disadvantaged socioeconomic means.
I read, and I'm looking at my notes here, Politico and other publications have been saying that colleges and universities tilt in favor of higher-income families to the detriment of minorities. They speak in terms of the 1%. That's who's going to college these days.
Yeah. I certainly don't find that to be the case on my campus and many others. We have approximately it's just over a fifth of our students, 20% of our earning students, are Pell eligible. That's coming from families of very modest backgrounds. Approximately 30% of our earning class, first-generation college students. So I think we and other area institutions, and I know the chancellors and presidents, are working hard to on the issue of access.
Yeah. Did the Ferguson difficulties impact recruitment at SLU?
So we've been able to maintain a pretty stable first-year enrollment. This year, in fact, we enrolled the second-largest class in our history and the highest scoring, one in the top 10% in the country. We are proud of that. But it's clear that there are some concerns about St. Louis, given some of the national press that we read, that can suppress the overall applicant pool, both nationally and internationally. There's so many good things going on in the region. If we can just address some of these very serious challenges, I think there'd be no stopping us in higher education and elsewhere.
Well, what would the role of higher education be in addressing these challenges?
Yeah, so I think it's on us to partner with all other sectors, the business sector, financial sector, government sector, to start to tackle those issues which were raised in the Ferguson report, those issues that we know are the most serious and in need of addressing as recently brought to light with the reaction to this verdict.
Right. My understanding is there are about 52,000 alumni of St. Louis University still living in this area. Got to put those folks to work.
Well, our alumni do a tremendous amount in the region. We're very proud of them and how they live the Jesuit mission through their lives, both here in the region and those well beyond.
Well, speaking of Ferguson, we have a caller from Ferguson who wants to join the conversation. Let's bring in Ron. Ron, you're on the air with Dr. Fred Pistello. Go ahead.
First, I wanted to say congratulations on 200 years. The second point I wanted to make is that a lot of these universities are cutting back on scholarships and staff because of the tax cuts that the state Senate gave away several years ago. They told us it was only going to cost $15 million and it ended up costing $450 million, and they're making it up on the backs of poor people in the educational system. And my next point is, even though St. Louis U is doing a great job, I think you guys could do a lot better job of recruiting women and other minority groups as staff. Would not like to point out, but some other universities are doing a lot better jobs in that area.
Okay, thank you for the call, Ron.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. We have not cut back scholarship dollars. In fact, we've increased them. One of our initiatives is called the Go Further campaign, where we've taken a sizable portion of our endowment and will match dollar for dollar any gift of $100 or more that our donors would like to put towards scholarship. I'm pleased to say that that has been enormously successful. People like when they can give a dollar and have it matched by a dollar to help young people afford our education. Certainly what we do is not expensive. It's a very high-touch approach. And we all know that the economic benefits of a college education on average are significantly consequential for one's lifetime earnings over those who do not attend college. So I think working on the access issue and the preparation, the pipeline issue is essential.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doug.
In conjunction with what you're saying here, in getting ready for this interview, I ran across something here that I had not seen before. I'd love to get your reaction to it. We talk about the elites having access to college where many others don't. That this led to Trumpism in the United States, the resentment of the middle class because the white upper class was taking over this whole process, led to the resentment that led to the election of a Donald Trump.
this is the first time I'm hearing that particular argument. I'm not sure that I can agree with it. But clearly, for any number of reasons, we want to make sure that our entire citizenry is well educated. I think it's incumbent on all of us to work toward that end. The more educated the citizens of a society, I think the better off the society on any number of levels. And I'm hoping that we in one small way are contributing to that.
Right. We have an email here from Madonna who writes, in March, St. Louis University's medical school was put on probation by the accrediting organization, the Liaison Committee on Medical Education. What specifically was the cause cited by LCME for this probation, and where does it stand now?
Yeah, so the LCME visited St. Louis University last October. I met with the accrediting team and then have a very full and thick report. We were cited on a number of issues, and I can tell you that we are aggressively addressing them. The next visit will be a year from October. I am comfortable, while we're fully accredited, that we will get off probation at that time. And there was a range of issues from not properly having the paperwork presented, not following through with respect to the outcomes that we had seen, and then being able to demonstrate that we were using that to make certain reforms. There's been no questioning, though, about the quality of the education we provide, but clearly I think we should have been better prepared for that visit.
How harmful is something like that to the overall institution?
You know, in the long run, I think it actually might be more helpful than harmful, to tell you the truth, because it really forces us to take a hard look at what we're doing and where medical education and medicine is headed, and to make adjustments on that basis. I was not pleased that it happened. None of us were pleased that it happened. But an event like that, if used appropriately as a wake-up call, can force you to take more dramatic action in the direction required than otherwise would be.
The institution obviously has a great deal to be proud about.
Thank you.
Remarkable institution. And now one of the top 100 in the country. I think you just made that list, didn't you?
A couple years ago, we were pleased to be in the U.S. News and World Report top 100 national research universities. Obviously, there is more that all of us colleges and universities do than is measured by U.S. News and World Report. But you're always proud when you achieve that and other ratings and rankings.
Well, how do you feel after 3 years on the job?
I feel that we're just getting started in many ways at the university. You know, things are changing fast in our society and in our sector, and we are working to address those changes to continue to provide, you know, a Catholic Jesuit education, one that not only is about the head and competency, but also about the heart and the hand.
Well, Dr. Fred Postello, thank you so much for being with us, and
thank
congratulations
you,
on the anniversary. We'll be hearing a lot about that over the next 15 months. And it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Same here. Thank you.
Hope you have a wonderful 200th celebration. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download to podcasts at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air, a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.